Accordingly, the next morning I dressed myself as clean and as neat as my rustic wardrobe would permit me, and having left my box with the landlady, I ventured out by myself, and without any more difficulty than can be supposed of a young country girl, barely 15, and to whom every sign or shop was a gazing-trap, I got to the wished-for intelligence office. It was kept by an elderly woman, who sat at the receipt of custom, with a book before her in great form and order, and several scrolls, ready made out, of directions for places. I made up, then, to this important personage, and, without lifting up my eyes, just made a shift to stammer out my business to her. Madam, having heard me out, with all the gravity of a petty minister of state, and seeing at one glance over my figure what I was, made me no answer but to ask me the preliminary shilling, on receipt of which she told me places for women were exceedingly scarce, especially as I seemed too slight-built for hard work, but that she would look over her book and see what was to be done for me. On this I drew back a little, most heartily mortified at a declaration which carried with it a killing uncertainty that my circumstances could not well endure. Presently, assuming more courage, I ventured to lift up my head a little, and sent my eyes on a course round the room, wherein they met full tilt with those of a lady, for such my extreme innocence pronounced her, sitting in a corner of the room, dressed in a velvet mantle with her bonnet off, squab-fat, red-faced, and at least 50. She looked as if she would devour me with her eyes, staring at me from head to foot, without the least regard to the blushes her eyeing me so fixedly put me to, and which were to her, no doubt, the strongest recommendation and marks of my being fit for her purpose. After a little time, in which my air, person, and whole figure had undergone a strict examination, she advanced, and spoke to me with the greatest demureness. "Sweetheart, do you want a place?" "Yes, and please you." Upon this, she acquainted me that she was actually come to the office herself to look out for a servant, that she believed I might do, that London was a very wicked, vile place, that she hoped I would be tractable and keep out of bad company. In short, she said all to me that an old experienced practitioner in town could think of, and which was much more than was necessary to take in an artless, inexperienced country maid. I being actually hired under the nose of the good woman that kept the office, whose shrewd smiles and shrugs I could not help observing, and innocently interpreted them as marks of her being pleased at my getting into place so soon. Madam was, however, so well pleased with her bargain, that fearing, I presume, lest better advice or some accident might occasion my slipping through her fingers, she would officiously take me in a coach to my inn, where, calling herself for my box, it was, I being present, delivered without the least scruple or explanation as to where I was going. This being over, she bid the coachman drive to a shop in St. Paul's Churchyard, where she bought a pair of gloves, which she gave me, and thence renewed her directions to the coachman to drive to her house, who accordingly landed us at her door, after I'd been cheered up by the way with the most plausible flams, without one syllable from which I could conclude anything but that I was, by the greatest good luck, fallen into the hands of the kindest mistress. At the house, my mistress first began her part with telling me that I must have good spirits and learn to be free with her, that she had not taken me to be a common servant to do domestic drudgery, but to be a kind of companion to her, and that if I would be a good girl, she would do more than 20 mothers for me. Presently, my mistress touched the bell, and in came a strapping maidservant who had let us in. "Here, Martha," said Mrs. Brown, "I've just hired this young woman to look after my linen, so step up and show her chamber, and I charge you to use her with as much respect as you would myself, for I have taken a prodigious liking to her, and I do not know what I shall do for her." Martha, being used to this decoy, had her cue perfect, made me a kind of half-curtsy, and asked me to walk up with her, and accordingly showed me a neat room, two pair of stairs backwards, in which there was a handsome bed, where Martha told me I was to lie with a young gentlewoman, a cousin of my mistress's, who she was sure would be vastly good to me. Then she ran out into such affected encomiums on her good mistress, her sweet mistress, and how happy I was to light upon her, that I could not have bespoke a better. With other the like gross stuff, such as would itself have startled suspicions in any but such an unpracticed simpleton, who took every word she said in the very sense she laid out for me to take it. In the midst of these false explanations of the nature of my future service, we were rung for down again, and I was reintroduced into the same parlour. And my mistress had now got with her one of her favourite girls, whose business it was to prepare and break such young fillies as I was to the mounting block. And she was, accordingly, in that view, allotted me for a bedfellow. Here I underwent a second survey, which ended in the full approbation of Mrs. Phoebe Ayres, to whose care and instructions I was affectionately recommended.